My name is Gretchen Draper, and I live up in New Hampton. And I have some questions just about the PUC in general. Now, I understand it's a three-member board. Are the members paid? Are you paid? Is this a paid position?
It's a full-time position. I know it got started by Charlie Bass's grandfather in 1911. And I think for some time it was a part-time thing, and then it might have gone to, like they do in Vermont, I think, where Vermont has, I think it ends up costing them as much, but they have one, quote, full-time, and then the other people are paid for each case. But there's enough cases that I don't think makes much difference. But in New Hampshire, sometime in the 50s or 60s, they switched it over to a full-time position. So, I mean, we're expected to, you know, work. And right. As a former commissioner, I can tell you it's not a 40-hour week job. I mean, it's 50 to 60, okay. You know,
yeah.
So.
My next question is, you stand between the utility companies and the ratepayers. Is that sort of part of your mission? And I'm interested, and this is in general, not to do with you folks, but I'm interested that there's no one sort of on the ratepayer side that's on the council.
The way it's set up is that it's administratively, there's an Office of Consumer Affairs,
right,
which reports to the commission, only administrative. We don't have any authority to tell them what to do, whatever.
I mean, consumer advocate.
Consumer advocate, yeah. Their mission is much more directed towards ratepayers than the commission. Whereas, you know, the gentleman over here explained the balancing act between just and reasonable and reliability that's required of the commission. The consumer advocate's position is they're out to look out for the ratepayers. So what they do is they will show up in the hearings and they will bring on witnesses and cross-examine witnesses and present testimony to try to say why, you know, this rate increase should be lower, or this person shouldn't get paid $8 million, or whatever like that.
So do you think it would be a good idea to include a consumer advocate on the panel? Either one? Mr. Scott?
Sure. Well, again, as Mr. Harrington was alluding to, so actually I like this, the way we're set up now. Sometimes the consumer advocate is actually under the Department of Justice in some states, but to have a totally separate entity who's not responsible or doesn't take direction from the commissioners, I think, is important. So, yeah, we could potentially have on our staff, and there is a consumer affairs division within the PUC, but what you don't want is somebody who would be told by the chair of the PUC, I'm your boss, do it this way. You want that separation, so somebody who is not beholden to the commission to come in and be a double check. Hopefully, this confirmation process and that type of thing, you know, we have some beholden to the public and make sure that's happening. But on top of that, you have the consumer advocate whose job every day and her staff is to make sure the citizens are protected individually. I think that's a good balance, and I think that's where it should be.
Yeah. One of the reasons for this to come about was because, like we said before, the commission is sort of balances things between the reliability, the need to make the utilities, I mean, they have to have the ability to make money because that's state law, because if they don't, then their decisions will be overturned by the Supreme Court, as well as the protecting the consumers and safety and rates and just and reasonable. But when it came down to the advocates in the hearings, the utilities could all afford to bring in their own lawyers or multiple lawyers, and that's why the Office of Consumer Advocate was set up, because they're coming in basically saying, well, we're the lawyers for the ratepayers. We're looking at the ratepayers the same way that the utility lawyers look at the utility companies. Our allegiance is not to the utility at all. It's just to the ratepayers, and I think it works pretty effectively that way.
Okay, well, and part of my concern that I just want to put out there is that the three-person commission is, in fact, all utility people. Is that right? I know that, Mr. Harrington, you have the background at Seabrook and nuclear energy. I was more interested.
Bob doesn't. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And neither does Amy.
Right. You're the only one. All right. Then I and I'm interested, too, in what kind of issues would you feel like you'd have to recuse yourself that came up against the PUC?
As far as my involvement with public service, it was strictly limited to running the nuclear plant, and it is, but you have to. I guess what I would say is that when I was there, I had, you know, various engineering and management positions, all of which were basically involved in keeping the plant running safely, and that responsibility is no longer with Public Service in New Hampshire. And when they were bought out by NU, they sold off that plant. It's now owned by Next Era. And there's nothing, no decisions that I'm going to make affecting PUC, from the PUC's position, that would have an impact on anything that I had to do with it, on my previous work at the Public Service, because all of that was at Seabrook.
I also bring this up because of what's going on now in Vermont with Vermont Yankee. And I'm wondering, if are there any issues from Vermont Yankee that spill over into New Hampshire? And how is the PUC involved in that kind of issue?
We've only involved very remotely, because, and that's because of the fact the unique situation was set up in Vermont when they sold the plant. They agreed to allow the Public Service Board there to have need a finding of public good in order to continue the license beyond the original period. And that's what's being debated in the courts and everything right now. There's no direct effect, in fact, no specific effect on the PUC from that, what happens in Vermont, other than the loss of New Hampshire, Vermont Yankee would have an effect on reliability in New Hampshire. If that plant were to close, it would cause the need for additional transmission lines or additional generation or a combination thereof to be built in New Hampshire, especially in southwest New Hampshire, simply to make up for the fact that you're losing 620 megawatts.
Sort of the, you know, the pollution, the concerns, like if there were health concerns, I mean, we're not very far from Vermont Yankee, and I guess that would be something I would think that the PUC would get involved in.
The only reason the PUC really got involved in that, because that's more of a DES situation, and also the medical people from HHS, they get involved in that. I'd say the only reason the PUC got involved at all in any of the Vermont Yankee issues is because I think I'm the only nuclear engineer working for the state of New Hampshire. So the governor has called up and asked me to get involved a few times, and I've reviewed reports and looked at analysis and stuff like that. But that was not as a PUC function. That was strictly because I happened to be a nuclear engineer.
And my final question is, and I'd like both of you to answer, what do you see as the key issues coming up in Northern Pass? I'd like to hear, you know, I know what my issues are with Northern Pass. I'd like to hear what you see. What are going to be your biggest challenges over the next year?
Just to win with Northern Pass, or challenges and everything in general?
I'm interested particularly in Northern Pass, please.
I think the biggest issues of Northern Pass are going to be what the legislature and the governor does with all these various laws. There's more than one out there. There's also the potential changes to the site evaluation committee. There's the presidential permits that still have to come out with the new environmental impact statement. There's an awful lot of things that need to be done before they even get to the point where they file with the site evaluation committee. So the process is going to be time consuming, so for sure. But what comes out of the legislature is going to be the biggest thing.
And again, this isn't really a site evaluation committee question more than a, but to be fair, I currently sit on the site evaluation committee in my current capacity, and as a PUC commissioner I do. So either way, I own it, so to speak. So some of the issues clearly are the site evaluation committee has Mike has alluded to it in his earlier discussions, a set of criteria to look at. There are five bills to change that criteria. So again, we are looking to the legislature, and I'm actively involved in that. We currently have to look at what's called the orderly development of the region. That can be somewhat nebulous, but you know, what does that mean? How do we address that? Balancing that's of interest to us also. The site evaluation committee looks at the environmental impacts, as does the Department of Environmental Services. That's all of concern. They look at that aesthetics. That's a unique thing for the site evaluation committee. A lot of factors. Pretty much everything that's of concern and voiced is most likely going to be an issue that the site evaluation committee needs to evaluate if and when that comes before us.
And I would suggest one thing with while these bills are live, what was it, 162H?
Yes.
If you see something in there, because it's a very specific list, if you see things in there that you think aren't being considered because they're not in that list, get to your legislature and say, this should be added to that bill, because if it's there, we'll consider it. But if it's not, we can't. I mean, that's what it comes down to.